Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have my good friend Bob from Static Radio, and we're going to be talking about something a little bit different tonight. We're going to be talking about top 5 worst movie endings. And here's the thing, we've all sat through bad movies before. Some movies are good, some movies are bad, but sometimes the tension just rises, and then it just falls flat at the end. But here we are, we're going to be talking about our top 5 worst movie endings. Right now. Hey, Bob. Welcome back to the show. I do appreciate it.
Yeah. How's it going?
It's going really good, man. It's always a pleasure to have you back on the show. Let's see. We did Fright Night back in October. We actually did Dune Prophecy episode 1. We did that. Yeah. So, yeah, we've been doing pretty good.
Now we're doing worst endings.
Yeah, something that's not so happy, right?
Well, it could be. I mean, some people, you know, there's a whole communities that love bad movies, so you know.
True.
This is it's a positive thing. There's a thing called the Smithy Awards that happens every year. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I heard the Rousey the Razzie Awards.
Razzies, right? Yeah, the Razzies and the Smithies, and those are all about bad movies and bad performances. So there you go.
Right. So my question for you guys listening and watching, have you ever sat through 2 hours of a movie totally invested just for the ending to make you go, that's it? That's how they're ending this? Well, you're not alone. Today we're diving into the most frustrating, head-scratching, and downright awful movie endings of all time. From bizarre twists to finales that made no sense, we're bringing it all down. Buckle up. This is going to be brutal. Do you have like any kind of honorable mentions or anything like that starting off?
I didn't even think about that. No, I don't. I was going to start off with a doozy.
Okay. Well, we can start off with your number 5 then.
Okay. Oh boy. My number 5. All right. I was going the opposite way, but I will start off with number 5 and switch around here. So I would say, and this is one of my favorite, franchises. And, so it pains me to mention it, but Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull has a very bad ending.
To be honest with you, the whole movie is just bad. So I pretty much erased everything that was within that movie from my brain, but tell the audience what that ending was, because here's the thing. I knew it had to do with aliens. I knew that right. part of that Indiana Jones with the Crystal Skull, but I don't have, I think Will Smith came by and MIB'd me in my face to where I didn't remember anything.
So, yeah, you just want to remember the trilogy. And then now that we've passed the trilogy into these other ones, it's like, that's a whole other world. So you don't even want to think about it. But it happened, and this was the, fourth in the, you know, this is the first one beyond the trilogy and the fourth movie for Indiana Jones. And, you know, it was, I mean, it was fun. You know, it was a fun movie. Started out really fun. You know, car chases, going through a mm-hmm. library. I mean, lots of action in the jungle and ants and monkeys and everything. And then we get to the, you know, then we can find the Crystal Skull and we have John Hurt. You know, as some kind of babbling professor. And then, but at the end, everything culminates in, I guess, like reassembling the aliens, and then they take off in their ship. And that's it. I mean, I was like, what? I mean,
the
Crystal Skulls were good, but you know, it's like, you should have, at the end, you should have had Dan Aykroyd come out and fill him up with vodka or something, because that's what, doesn't he sell Crystal Head vodka? And make it a whole commercial for him or something. It would have been better. But yeah, but I do love Indiana Jones. And actually, for a good portion of this movie, it was fun. You know, it was a fun Indiana Jones movie. And then, but it, I think they just kind of like, well, now we got to wrap it up, so let's just make it be aliens.
Right. It's like, okay, well, we only have, this is a 2.5 hour movie, so let's go ahead and just see what we can squeeze in together just to wrap this thing up.
Right. That's right. Exactly. It was like, okay, we only got another week to shoot, so we'll just CGI the ending and have him walking out of a valley. There we go.
And that's the end of it. And then Shia LaBeouf probably picks up Indy's hat, and then it's supposed to symbolize that he's the next right. Indiana Jones.
But they didn't. They didn't let him pick up Indy's hat. They almost let him pick up Indy's hat, but they didn't. So, which okay. is probably for the best, right?
I think I just did a Mandela effect where I thought that happened, but it didn't happen. So well,
it was, they were alluding to it. And then at the last, Indiana Jones actually picked up his own hat. And put it on, like, you know, there's no other, right? So,
right.
To cross franchise, there can be only one, and it's Harrison Ford. So the, but yeah, although to be honest, that's for the best. I mean, Shia LaBeouf kind of went off the deep end, and he's got his own lousy ending, going on with his life, I think, currently. So not to kick a guy while he's down, but, he seems to have kind of torpedoed his own career a bit there. So.
But
definitely. But I think that's one of the, you know, that's my number five. But I really love Indiana Jones, and I really wanted it to be good. And, you know, I saw it and I was excited to go see it. And then I was like, and then now, you know, time has passed and I'm like, okay, yeah, this was really not good. Really not good at all.
Right, because I'm not sure, like, did I really enjoy it? Did I not enjoy it? Am I being too critical here? Maybe I'm just being too hard pressed on it. Because sometimes I walk out of the movie theater, I'm like, am I being too hard on this movie? Did I not like this movie? And then you go back and try to replay it. It's like, yeah, this is just a bad movie.
Yeah.
So I totally get it.
A lot of my list are good movies until they became bad. I mean, they were good in the beginning. They started out and they're like, you're like, this is really fun, and this is you know, old Indiana Jones style, with the everything that happened, you know, at the beginning, and then, you know, it falls off a cliff. I mean, they didn't have Nazis in this one; they had Russians, but you know, a good Russian Nazi substitute is fine with me. So,
exactly. So, pick up your vodka and. We're going to talk about another – here's the thing. I'm a huge Stephen King fan. So when I found out they were doing The Mist, I had to watch this. So everything about this, from Thomas Jane being in this and then it being a small town, and then you have these creatures that are coming into this town, and there's just something horrifying of something that you cannot see, just like how the fog is.
Mm-hmm.
But – I liked everything about this movie, and I'm just like you when it comes down to the Indiana Jones movie. Was like, it was a good movie up until the ending of this movie of The Mist. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had to go with this ending because of the fact that it's just so damn depressing. Because yeah. This is one of the soul crushing things about this film, where you know the survivors are trapped, and also too, and you're thinking that this horrifying thing within the mist itself, and is never going to end with these creatures coming out and stuff like that. And if Thomas Jane just would have just waited a few minutes later, everybody would have been fine,
right?
You know, yeah. But survival over common sense, though, is another thing, though, too. It's about survival. No one's about survival, but it's like, you know, guys, we did the best we could. We survived. We got out of the. We ended up getting out of the supermarket. We survived everything else. But look, let's just call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to make this out alive. So he gets everybody to kill themselves that's in that car.
Mm-hmm.
And then only to find that the military arrives seconds later, revealing that they all are about to be rescued. It's a brutal gut punch of an ending. That left me like kind of questioning my questioning everything that I was enjoying about this movie. It's like, what the fuck? You know, you put me through this and now you're making me go through this whole entire emotional damage of these characters offing themselves.
Wait, do you think it would have been better if it, like, only a couple of people killed themselves and then the army showed up? Wait a minute, stop! Everybody stop! I don't think that would have been any better, to be honest with you, but who knows?
I think they should have stopped at the son whenever he was about to kill himself. That way Thomas Jane and his son would have actually been out of the car.
Yeah.
But to know that your own son killed himself.
Yeah.
That is horrific.
For no reason at that point, yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah, you have the deal from The Walking Dead in this movie and stuff like that. All these secondary characters. But underneath the surface of it all, you're focusing on through the lenses of Thomas Jane and his son and the survival of those two characters. Where you can actually off those characters, other characters, even though we might have emotional attachment to those other characters. But here's the thing. It's about Thomas Jane and his son. So if he would have just said, hey, son, look, so I have a bad look, let's just change our minds right here and stuff and see what happens. It's just us now.
Right. Let's take a breath here. Hold on a minute. I think I hear something in the distance.
But here's the thing, though, too. You also don't know what's coming out of that mist either. Either something good or something bad. It's like a 50-50 shot that is the military.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm with you. But I think, you know, maybe the idea was to give you that emotional ending. Overly emotional ending, but you're right. It's like maybe they could have done a better thing other than the military rescuing. You know what I mean? So maybe they could have at least made it somewhat clever rather than just the cavalry shows up.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I have for my number five, but I just want to mention this. There was actually a what the fuck moment, like in the movie theater when I saw Battlefield Earth, even though that whole entire movie sucked.
Yeah.
But I remember sitting in the theater, and one guy says, what the fuck did I just watch?
Right.
I'm like, well, I'm glad I wasn't the only one, dude, because that was actually my words that was going to come out of my mouth. But yeah.
Battlefield Earth is a weird one, yeah, that's for sure. But there's a whole lot of backstory on that movie.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Yeah.
But yeah. What do you have for your number four, though?
So I'm still deep in franchise territory here, and I'm going to say the ending of the culmination of all the Harry Potter movies.
Okay.
I think that was not the best. Well, first of all, I don't think that the last movie needed to come in two parts, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, they filled the time, but I mean, they filled the time. They could have condensed everything down into kind of one longer movie, you know, 2.5-3 hour movie rather than doing two full. I think they were a little over 2 hours each,
right.
Two parts. I mean, you know, they that was obviously a money inspired move, I think, on everybody's part. They're like, oh, this thing is going to, this money train's coming to an end. Let's add another stop.
Well, don't forget, during that time, though, too, we also had the Twilight series that was doing the same thing first.
Everybody did, yeah, everybody.
So well, I was like, that's okay, probably, so yeah. Let's capitalize on what Twilight did.
Oh, yeah, it worked out.
Yeah.
Monetarily, it worked out. But then at the end, you know, it was just, it just felt stretched out. And then they had, you know, they were there at the end with their kids. They're going to go to Hogwarts. And nobody really looked that much older other than they, like, aged Ron Weasley. And then the others all just stayed young. And so they really did dirty to Ron on that scene, because he's the one that looked like he was, you know, on his journey to be an alcoholic or something, where the rest of them still looked fairly youthful, comparatively speaking, you know.
Right.
And Voldemort turns to dust, and you know, it just was all kind of overrun and stretched out and stuff. I can say I did not read the books.
Okay.
My kids read all the books because it was their, you know, kind of their, the timing was right for them to read all the books. And so, so maybe it was a little more true to the, books or something. I don't know for sure, but, no, I just think it was like, and then, you know, I know they wanted a kind of a happily ever after by showing them that, you know, Hogwarts continues and they all have families and so forth, which was kind of nice, but I think that the, you know, they could have skipped it, really, honestly. They could have just.
You see, I read all the Harry Potter books myself, though, too. So that's actually how they ended in the book itself, with the, mm-hmm. them at the train and stuff like that.
Right.
And leaving their, and putting their kids on the train.
Yeah.
So it was very true to the book as far as that goes. The book is huge. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was good, but I was actually pissed off at another Harry Potter movie other than the one that you mentioned.
The Deathly Hallows?
It was actually The Order of the Phoenix that I was okay. more pissed off about, I think.
Okay. You want to elaborate on that or no?
Yeah, I'll elaborate on that. Okay. Because here's the thing. In the book, there was supposed to be this big, huge battle that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it even had the werewolf that turned one of the professors into a werewolf.
Right, right.
And he's not even in it.
And, oh, okay.
And it was supposed to be this whole entire revenge plot with them. You have this whole entire thing that happens, and it doesn't happen. And I'm like, I'm on the edge of my seat because I read the book. I'm like, this is going to go down. I was turning into Kevin Hart. The shit is about to go down. And my brother-in-law is like, what are you doing? I said, I'm excited for this. And he goes, what's about to happen? You'll see. Nope. It didn't happen.
So, well, see, they left that out, you know, which was probably, obviously for you, very exciting. That should have happened. And then here they drug out this last movie, you know, terribly. I mean, they had the whole, soccer equivalent with the Quidditch games and everything that just went on forever. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I just think that after, you know, investing a decade of your life and watching these movies, they could have come up with something a little bit more interesting.
Agreed. I very much agree with you on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm going to go with this. I don't have any franchise films or anything like that on my list. I have this on my list, though. I had the movie Prisoners on my list for number 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I loved it all the way up until the ending. I love watching movies that have slow tension build up.
Okay.
And it has this, you're wondering what's happened to Hugh Jackman's kid the whole entire time. You're not sure who kidnapped the kid or not. You also have Paul Dano, who plays a creepy as fuck guy, even though he's even creepy on, you know, the Batman.
Right, yeah.
But you're wondering if he kidnapped his kid. It has a slow pace. Even Jake Gyllenhaal's great in this movie. The tension is there. everything's about to happen. You wind up finding out what happened to his kid, who kidnapped him. And then it ends on this very bleak ending of Hugh Jackman's character laying in the ground, and then Jake Gyllenhaal standing outside, and you can hear Hugh Jackman from under the ground blowing his whistle, blowing mm-hmm. a whistle, and it's very faintly, and then it cuts to black. I'm like, what the hell? Like, all that tension, all that care of me wanting to know we have justice because of the fact that we finally found out who, you know what I'm saying, who kidnapped his kid. We also mm-hmm. established that, but also, too, I want to actually have Hugh out of the ground.
Right,
and
right.
It doesn't even show that. So I'm like, does he make it? Does he not make it? Do I just make up my own ending and pretend that he did? I don't like bleak endings like that.
That's just like The Mist. It's the same kind of thing. It was a bleak ending. You didn't like it. There you go.
Right. I like some closure sometimes. Sometimes it's one of those things in movies where I'm like, okay, it's life, right? So in life, we don't have closure or anything. That's mm-hmm. just the way life is. And some movies are like that. I'm like, okay, that's just life. That's the way life is. I don't have to worry about having closure for this movie because that's actually how the tone of the movie is. But with this, I'm like, I want closure. What the hell happened?
So, yeah. Paul Dano is a creep. He plays such a good creep in all kinds of movies. He was creepy in There Will Be Blood. He was very creepy as two different characters. And then he was in the funny thing is there's a connection between Harry Potter and the Passengers in Paul Dano because he was with Daniel Radcliffe in Swiss Army Man. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
I heard of it.
Yeah, it's a weird movie. Although, to be honest, Paul Dano's not really that creepy in that movie.
That's a step. step up for him.
But Daniel Radcliffe is very creepy in that movie. So there you go.
Right.
No, that's interesting. So he it fades to black and you don't know what his fate is.
No. Hmm. And the thing is, I love Jake Gyllenhaal as the cop who is trying to investigate everything. And he's pissed off at Paul Dano because he thinks that Paul did it, and so does Hugh, who thinks he did it mm-hmm. as well. Hugh decides he's going to go on ahead and try to investigate the Paul Dano's house because of how convenient that his van was actually next to his house on the day of his daughter being missing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, he automatically assumes that it's Paul Dano, and he's also the suspect.
Right.
So Jake Gyllenhaal also thinks he's a suspect. The tension that they had building around that was so damn good. You have Jake Gyllenhaal slamming up against the wall, trying to get information out of Paul. There's just that eeriness and creepiness of Paul Dano that is. Mm-hmm. He just does a phenomenal job of me saying, "Yeah, I wouldn't trust this guy with a 10-foot pole."
Right. He's guilty by personality. Yeah. Yeah. His personality is so creepy that he's just guilty of anything that you can put on him.
Exactly.
This was a Denis Villeneuve movie, oddly enough, Passengers. I don't know if that's the Dune director nowadays. Yep. Yeah, interesting. Well, that he's also French, and the French love, you know, downer endings. So there you go.
Let's see here. Jubilex says, some of the saddest but most optimistic movie endings, films that ended at the beginning of a sequel that never happened. Yeah, I can see that. There are some movies that are like that. I just can't think of any of them on hand right now.
The first one popped into my head was there was an old movie called Remo Williams. Mm-hmm. The Adventure Begins, and it's supposed to have a sequel, and it never did.
It's
like a late 80s movie with Fred Ward was the star, the guy from Tremors. But anyway, yeah, but that's the first one that popped into my head. But I think
I could go Constantine on that.
Constantine's going to get one. Oh, Buckaroo Banzai, of course. Yes.
Yeah, okay, Buckaroo Banzai, yeah.
And Constantine is going to have a sequel. It's in the works, apparently.
Right. It's just that lead up being so many years of them teasing us that we're going to get a sequel and stuff, and especially the way it ended with Shia, with that post-credits ending that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff made us want more.
I love Constantine. I think it's a great movie. I've watched it several times. And Peter Stormare playing the devil is, you talk about creepy. Talk about a creepy guy.
Most definitely.
There's a, him and Paul Dano could have a creep fest. They need to make a movie between the two of them being super creepy.
I would pay to see that. Pay to see that.
It'd be pretty good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So what do you have for your number three?
Okay. And then this may be, we had a quick, conversation before we started. This may be creeping into that territory. The Village.
Oh. Dang, man. That's actually my number three.
Oh, okay. Well, that's my number three as well. So we could just talk about it.
Okay.
I like M. Night Shyamalan movies typically. I think that, he's unfortunately steered himself into his own genre. You know what I mean? So he's gonna have his own word, like Hitchcockian or whatever. There'll be, Shyamalan like or whatever, like Kubrickian. Cause he makes kind of the same thing over and over. I think The Village may have been kind of that point where he kind of caged himself in. To have the big twist movie. Obviously, Sixth Sense, good movie and everything that kind of set him on this course. But The Village, I think, is what trapped him. Because,
Well, if you remember, Time Magazine was trying to put him down as like the next Steven Spielberg.
Sure.
So at that point, his ego was pretty much like, okay, I got to make every movie have a twist.
Well, he should have, whoever was giving him that, recommendation, he should have dropped that immediately and went and done something different. Cause he's stuck now. He's totally stuck. There's every movie, I think after this one is kind of similar in the nature where it has to have some kind of weird twist to it. And yeah, this one was, I think it was the one that set him on this path. And it's also, I think, it's not the worst one, unfortunately, but it is the one that, made the detour for him because, we have to send our blind, girl out into the world. We've got this forest reserve that we live on, but we don't really know that yet. And then, they get out and then the whole thing's just a ruse. And it's like this poor woman is Bryce Dallas Howard, I think, and is tortured for what? For nothing. For
right,
no
exactly.
Whatsoever. I mean, it was
she had to climb over that fence at the very end of it.
Yeah.
Then to find out that this guy's lying his ass off the whole entire time.
Right.
There's just some stupid Halloween costume.
Right. It's just like a piece of fabric and a couple of sticks with light, a couple of flashlights or something. It was like the dumbest reveal. You know what I mean? They kind of got you going. And then it was made really well, but then you're like, oh gee.
Yeah. He sends her out on a quest because remember Joaquin Phoenix gets hurt and she's in love with Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
And so therefore she tries to save him.
Right. Oh, you have to go to the civilization or whatever. You have to go outside the village. Yeah. I mean, how big was the land? My gosh, this went on forever.
It looked like something that was just out of my backyard or something. Right. And then that was it. That's what it looked like for the village, for the small community.
But then it took forever. I guess it does take a long time when you're blind to navigate when you can't. You don't know any of your surroundings. I don't know, but maybe she just walked in circles for a couple of days. But yeah, the ending kind of ruined the whole movie just collapsed at the end and you get done and it's like, why did I watch this? Why am I so invested in this? It was such a letdown, a tremendous letdown in a lot of ways. And then, he obviously, still makes movies and whatnot, but I'm like, oh my gosh, that stupid village. Why did I bother with it?
The bad thing is I remember going to see it in the theater and I'm like, I'm really enthused with it. I remember being sucked into it and then watching it as an adult.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
I'm like, why does this blind person, what makes her so special that she has to go out and do it? Why couldn't somebody who could see come up, go out and do this? Why does she have to be the one to carry out this task?
Anybody with even with like half vision could have got out of there in 20 minutes and got everything and come back.
Right.
It would have been like going to you know, a couple blocks down to get some food and bringing it back or something. They didn't need to have all this production to you know, this poor blind girl torture her for, you know, an hour and a half. It was I was just like and I mean, Unbreakable, loved it. Sixth Sense, loved it. I even like Signs, and yeah, and then this, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, this really, this is the best you've got, you know, this
right.
Is it.
And here's the thing, Signs didn't have no twist to it. Believe it or not, he has a resurgence now, and he's actually done pretty decent with his resurgence. But knock on the cabin, it didn't even have a plot twist to it. It was what it was. I'm like, okay. So you're learning from your past mistakes, even though I know the next movie that you're probably going to have is going to be a plot twist.
Right, right, exactly. It'll be, he'll get drawn back into it. Well, because that's, you know, that's what people are expect him to do now. And he's done it several times. And so, yeah, it's like he's, if there's a director that could be typecast, he's that director.
Right. It's like, okay, I used to call him the Sham Hammer. That's what I used to call him.
Because he's the ham-fisted way he does things? Yeah,
because it's the same repetitive stuff. The only thing he didn't do that was repetitive was knock on the cabin, and then that one with him and Will Smith with Jaden Smith that he directed. And that actually took his name off the directing thing because nobody wanted to take a chance with him at the or anything like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they don't even have it directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
He's a Smithy at that point then. Oh,
right.
Okay.
He's like an unknown director. Nobody knows who he is. And then later on you find out, oh, it was him. But, you know, I didn't like this movie. I will never go back and rewatch The Village.
No. Mm-mm.
The Village is like, what the F am I watching?
Yeah, so, it literally was a 5-minute movie that they stretched out to 2 hours or whatever it was. Hour and 50 minutes. Cause that you get the guard or whatever. And it's like, you could have just basically could have ran to the north for about 10 minutes and been at the guard shack and been all done with it.
Exactly. That's all it is. It could have been a short film. If you think about it.
Easily. Yeah. it should have been a short film.
Exactly. But yeah. So I'm going to go with another one. I'm going to go with my number two, The Happening.
Oh, I have that one on here too. I was putting nothing that happens. One as my number one though, but
here's the thing.
Okay.
Nothing happens in The Happening.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like the dialogue. I know that I had a couple of films that were really good. And then once you get into this bottom tier, it's just a shit fest. Like once you get into number two and number one. It's just a crap fest. I still remember Mark Wahlberg's dialogue. Why? Yeah. No. What's going on? And then there's also the other thing where the awkward conversation between him and his wife. I don't know why I still remember this quote, Bob. I still don't. But want to know the quote that I remember from this movie?
What's that?
Okay. You know, I thought about dating this one girl at the drugstore. But I didn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and his wife's just like, look, what the F? What are you talking about? It came so out of the left field. I'm like, what's up with that?
That's when she was like, what's happening? That's what she said. What's happening? Yeah, I think Mark Wahlberg was trying to go against type by being in this movie, even though M. Night was being totally in type by making this movie. And so, yeah, I think Mark Wahlberg was not the usual Mark Wahlberg that you catch in movies, right? So he's kind of, you know, typed himself. He plays a cop or he plays a con, and he's got a heart of gold in either of those roles. And typically, to be honest with you, most of the time he does a really good job of playing that, and right. You enjoy watching it. And he, you know, the other thing is he didn't take his shirt off, I don't think, in this one, and that's usually his trademark. So, you know,
like maybe night, yeah,
they should have had him take his shirt off in The Happening. And maybe it would have took it.
Maybe something happened. Maybe that would make something happen in The Happening.
Maybe whenever he was giving that line, he could have took his shirt off. You know, I thought about dating this one girl at the drugstore.
I'm like, that was like so awkward and cringy. I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? And you have John Leguizamo in this movie that signed on for this movie, who's a damn good actor whenever he has the right stuff. Mm-hmm. Like with that one movie that Rossi and I reviewed. With the chef.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a good movie.
He was, he was really good in that. I watched that. Yeah,
and yeah.
I'm trying to remember the name. It's not called The Chef though. Chef was
God, what is his name? The Menu.
The Menu is the other one. I think.
I don't remember.
Chef is with the.
I know John Favreau is the chef.
Yeah, John Favreau is the chef. But actually, John Leguizamo is in that with John. Okay, I was confused. He's in Chef. You're right. He's in there with John Favreau. They're together. They're together.
That's why I remembered it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called Menu.
There's another one. No, it's called Chef. He's in the Chef one. The Menu's the other one.
Yeah, The Menu is a horror movie that I was talking about.
Right, the Menu's a horror movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right, because he's in both of them. That's the crazy
thing. Yeah, that's why I got confused.
He's the kind of gangster guy in the Menu thing, right? So.
Well, he was the actor that was like a B,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A B-listed actor. Yeah. And he becomes like a foodie or something like that. I forgot.
Right. He wants to be a foodie, I think was the thing. He was. Wow. We really mixed those up, didn't we?
Well, it wasn't hard because he played in The Menu and he also played the chef. So there you go.
That's true. I forgot he was in either one of those, to be honest with you. But he did a good job.
Yeah.
Now that I remember.
Here's the thing. You're going to blame the trees.
Right. Yeah. The plane.
And The Happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, that's because of everything that we're doing to the planet. And that's why it wants to kill us. I'm like, okay, great. Thank you, Smokey the Bear. I do appreciate me sitting down, wasting 2.5 hours of my life that I can't get back.
Yeah, well, they should have pulled in, you know, kind of some Tolkien there with the Ents, you know, and the Ents were not worried about anything. They're real laid back until they start, you know, burning the forest.
Right.
So, and then they're like, oh, hey.
So now that I'm done complaining about another M. Night Shyamalan movie, what do you have?
So, yeah, The Happening was my number one. And then here's my number two, which is an older movie called Waterworld with Kevin Costner. And so Waterworld, again, kind of like the Indiana Jones thing, it starts out really good. The first half hour, 45 minutes of Waterworld is action-packed, fun, you know, slam-bam kind of movie that you would want to watch. I mean, it is great. I mean, they had the whole, you know, stunt spectacular at Universal Studios for years on Waterworld because it was such a fun first part of the movie. And then at the end, it's another one of these kind of stupid movies. They're like, you know, save the girl. She's got the map. And then the map consists of basically a giant fancy arrow and a circle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even like got like micro printing or something. That's it. And then they're like, well, they discover the map and it's like, oh, you go north. And it's like, really? This is where all this great action. And I think one of Jack Black's early roles was in this movie. You know, Dennis Hopper was great. He's the villain and he was very, you know, villainy. And, you know, they created a whole world on the water and it looked real good. And
which makes it water world. Yeah.
Yeah. Which makes it water world. And there's a whole thing about, you know, they're collecting dirt and all these, you know, artifacts from, I mean, they really built the world, right? That's world building. And then, yeah, then this is the payoff here at the end. Okay. Some little kid that somehow got tattooed when they were a baby and yet it expanded and it's not like all crap. It looks solid. I mean, do you have any tattoos, John? I don't know.
I got two tattoos.
Okay. So, I mean, when you get old, depending on where they're at, on your body, I'm not going to ask you to reveal.
I promise you nothing on my private parts. I promise you that. But
as you get older, because your skin, you know, loosens up and everything, then your tattoos can change a little bit, right? They change shape a little bit. So if this kid was tiny when they got this tattoo and they grew, it wouldn't look the same. It would look different. Anyway,
be like an Indiana Jones map of them stretching out her skin to find out where they're at.
Exactly. I'm like, my God. I was just like, what? I remember, I'm like, is everybody just buying into this? I'm looking around, you know, in the theater. Everybody's okay. They're just following along.
It's like, okay, it's just me. I'm the problem. Okay. Yeah, I gotcha. Not a problem. I remember. I have some good memories with that movie though, seeing it with my grandfather.
It was the first part of it was excellent. The weird thing is I read a lot about movies back in that time too, and Kevin Reynolds was the director, was actually listed as the director, but he didn't finish the film, right? And Kevin Reynolds and Kevin Costner got into it. And I believe the first part of the film was directed by Kevin Reynolds and the last part of the film was directed by Kevin Costner.
It was because he was always Kevin Costner. I love it. I love his acting and stuff, but he always wanted to take control over everything.
Right,
even in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, he wanted to take over. So at that point, the director's like, with Waterworld, it's like, okay, Kevin, well, since you think you can do a better job than I can here.
Right. I'll take my money and go. Yeah. Right. And I think that, and then you literally can see the split in the movie. It's almost night and day. I mean, they kept some of the elements and obviously it was a very well-made movie, but you know, as far as the storytelling goes, it falls off a cliff real fast.
It really does.
And I'm like, if I see water, like if you're, you know, nowadays you don't flip around, but back when you flipped around on channels, yeah, I would watch the first part of Waterworld. And then as soon as it got about 45 minutes in, I just like, okay, that's the movie for me. I'm done. I'm not watching the rest of this. I'll go on to something else because that's really where, I mean, that's the best part of the movie. There's no sense in watching anything past that. So,
no.
Yeah, I'm just like, how could they? I think you're right. So it's kind of the ego. So we just talked about Shyamalan doing the same thing for the village in The Happening. It's the ego. They're like, I can get away with anything. And Kevin Costner at that point had already had his Oscar for Dances with Wolves, which was a good movie.
Right.
And so he's like, I can do anything. And the reality was, no, you can't.
No, you can't, Kevin. I'd be like, look, Kevin, I'm the one director here. You're the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Act your ass off. Do your job. I'm happy you won your Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
But you signed on to do this film. You signed on to make X, Y, and Z. So you go on your little raft over there, act like you're in love with this actress and move on with your life.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Cause I mean, that was speaking of sequels that didn't happen. Waterworld was being built up to be a trilogy. Like, you know, at that time period, they wanted to have more Waterworlds.
That would be awesome. Like that was like a Dune kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Where totally.
I'm sucked into that. I would buy into that.
It's tainted now, but I mean, honestly, if you could take the first part, if you could remake the movie and keep the track of the first part and take it all the way through to the end, it could easily be a trilogy. It is a world. It is built out. It is complex and interesting and funny and anything can happen because you can bring in any character from somewhere off the sea, you know, and that's what world building is, like, just like Star Wars. There's always another planet, right, to explore. There's always more things happening. Right. And so they could have easily had something like that with Waterworld if they would have, you know, not botched it so much. And I mean, it was at the time.
It was an original concept. There's nothing, no books based on it.
Right.
Exactly. It was an original piece. Nobody was doing this. It was a great time to actually just use your imagination. Mm-hmm. And just build on this world and be creative with it.
At the time, I think it was the most expensive movie ever made at the time it came out, and it didn't make its money back. Then I'm sure it's made its money back by now because of
the cult classics and stuff.
Right, yeah, reruns and then just the stunt spectacular probably made it its money back, to be honest with you.
Well, even at Universal Studios, really they also still have the Waterworld attraction, so it's still making some royalties.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, I think that would be, I think somebody should take another swing at it because I thought it was really fun. I mean, it would be even better now with all the advancements of everything, but it was a really fun idea, you know, a fun idea. Mm-hmm. Hybrid people, he had gills, you know, and so there could have been other hybrid people and it was evolution of people if they had to, you know, live on water all the time.
I definitely agree with you on that, man. But yeah, I had a great time watching it with my grandfather. I remember going to the movie theaters to go see it. I remember being intrigued with the mythology within the world of this thing of nothing but water. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would love to see an original piece on this, like a TV series off Max or something.
Yeah.
We always say leave original movies alone and don't remake anything. This one deserves a remake.
Oh yeah, definitely. They should remake this one. Yeah, no kidding. They should map it out. You know, get somebody visionary like Denis Villeneuve and not M. Night Shyamalan. We'll leave him over in his other area. But you know, get somebody who's got some experience. Vision. Yeah, and stick them on this, and it can happen. It's been long enough. I think people have kind of forgotten. Although Kevin Costner was kind of front and center in the SNL thing here recently, so maybe they haven't forgotten. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what. Okay, so I love Martin Scorsese movies. Sign me up for any type of Martin Scorsese movie I'm in. So whenever he decided that he was going to make a horror movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, and I saw that trailer.
Oh, yeah.
I already predicted the ending. I looked at my friend. Mm-hmm. He goes, "That looks so good." I said, "It looks like something that I've already seen."
Yeah.
Guess what? I said, and I'm going to tell you the title of it. It's Shutter Island.
Yeah, Shutter
Island. I appreciate Martin. I appreciate you, Marty, for everything you did. You gave us Goodfellas. You gave us Casino. You gave us The Departed. Kings of New York. You gave us some of the greatest movies in cinema history.
Mm-hmm.
But you shot the bed with Shutter Island. Because here's the thing. If I'm able to predict the plot twist to a movie in the trailer.
In the trailer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your movie is not – it sucks.
Yeah.
Because I remember my friend going, "This looks like it's going to be so good." I'm like, "This movie looks like it sucks."
Yeah.
Guess why? I said, I bet you $100 on release day that – Leonardo DiCaprio is the insane person in this asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And he's acting like he's actually the PI in this thing investigating this asylum.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he called me and he goes, "I owe you $100. I guess I told you so.
But, oh man. Yeah. I mean, again, another really, I mean, well-made movie, but you're right. It was like, yeah, this is not a good movie. This is you know, a well-made movie that didn't really go anywhere.
No. I loved it. I mean, I loved the beginning of it. I liked the whole entire thing of Leonardo DiCaprio investigating this asylum and trying to figure out who's corrupt, who's not corrupt, and stuff like that within this asylum. And then you get into the whole fact of, you know, he's the insane patient. And then they're also doing some type of brain thing to for him not to remember anything as well. So not only do you are you messing with that, you're putting two different types of genres together in a sense, and it doesn't coincide together. It's not a cohesive movie for me to enjoy.
Yeah.
All that stuff that I loved about the beginning of it is now gone, and now this is what I'm stuck with.
Right, exactly. I was trying to remember what year Shutter Island was. Do you have it in front of you?
I think it's like early 2000s, I believe.
I'm going to look it up here.
2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to remember. So, okay. Well, I was it was very Fight Club-ish in a little bit of a way, but Fight Club was about 10 years earlier. So I was like, was it too close to Fight Club? But I couldn't remember the years there. But not too
99
close.
Was Fight Club.
Fight Club, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I did like the performances. I like Mark Ruffalo was in it. He did a good job, you know.
Ben Kingsley, fantastic.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it was like, okay. It was another one of those things. It was like, yeah, all right, whatever. Yeah.
For sure. But, yeah, that's everything on my list that I wanted to mention because of the fact that I wanted to do something different whenever it came down to figuring out my list. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to have two movies from the same director or anything. but I'm like, you're making it very hard for me, M. Night.
Well, we both had both those movies on the list, so there's got to be something to it because we didn't talk ahead of time or anything. There was no comparison of anything ahead of time. We just, okay, five worst movies, come up with your list. And we'll talk about them. And there you go. They're both on the list. So I think that tells you what you need to know.
Exactly.
They're really bad.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, really I could bad. Go in with a couple of honorable mentions I have. I have I Am Legend for the theatrical cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the film just builds up on the emotional aspect of the action-packed survival story. Mm-hmm. And it throws in a generic Hollywood sacrificing ending. That's something that I didn't really like is how generic it was because Will Smith's character, Robert, dies in an explosion. And then the alternate ending, get this, anytime when you have an alternate ending, I don't pay attention to.
Right, yeah.
And it also revealed that the creatures had their own intelligence and just wanted one of their own back. And the theatrical cut completely missed a deeper message of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know. But yeah, I just didn't care for I Am Legend the way I wanted it to. And it had so much going for itself that I really liked in this apocalyptic world.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's just my little small nugget of an honorable mention of that. But yeah,
well, I am Legend. There's an older movie called The Omega Man. It's basically the same movie. With Charlton Heston. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. It's like in the 70s.
No, whatever.
Haven't. It's from the same source material. And, but I think even though it's older, you know, when you watch it, you're like, because the sensibilities, basically if you get pre-80s at this point, it's hard to watch those, movies because of the, special effects and stuff aren't that great unless it's a really, really, really good movie. Like, I think Planet of the Apes is made in the 70s. It still holds up. But Omega Man, with Charlton Heston basically in the Will Smith role, is the same source material. And I think it's a better movie as far as the story goes.
I might have to check that one out. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's like I said, you have to, you know, go into it knowing that it was made, you know, well before good effects were happening and so forth, but it is an interesting movie. So,
let's see.
Yeah.
Jubilex says there's an older one with Vincent Price, Last Man on Earth. Okay.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. I don't know. I probably have watched it because I watched a lot of like horror movie night, you know, on broadcast a long time ago, but I can't recall. But I think I remember I noticed the title and I know that Vincent Price was in it. So, but I can't recall much of the movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but I've watched a lot of Vincent Price before. Mm-hmm. I think a long time ago, Tamika and I did a review on House on a Haunted Hill.
House on a Haunted Hill, yeah. Yeah, he did the a original, bunch of horror movies, yeah, in the 60s and so forth, yeah. He was in a version of The Fly, Vincent Price was.
The original Fly.
Yeah.
Not the one with Jeff Goldblum.
Right, yeah. Not Jeff Goldblum's Fly, which is really gross. If you think about it, but,
yeah.
Brundlefly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be it, man. I do appreciate you coming on the show, doing this. Do you have anything new coming out as far as your podcast goes or anything like that? Any type of shout outs or anything? You now have the floor.
I do. Well, you can always listen to me on Static Radio, and we do a comedy show, on that of, Tales from the Midwest, all kinds of funny stories. But I'm doing something that's coming out on Monday. That's a new thing. And it's called Mondo Freako. And it is about, we're taking on the world of, cryptids, UFOs, the paranormal and the supernatural, and talking, on a topic each week, in a humorous way about each one of these things. So, If you'd like to hear about the kind of strange, high strangeness with a comedy bent, you can tune into Mondo Freako at, I think it's MondoFreakoPodcast.com.
Okay. Well, on Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, I will be joined by Stuart from It Doesn't Hold Up Podcast. And we're going to be talking about The Cable Guy. We're going to be finally reviewing The Cable Guy. You guys have voted in on that a couple of months back. So we're reviewing The Cable Guy, and we're going to go ahead and talk about it nostalgically. We're going to remove the nostalgia and look at it in a modern day. So check that out at 2 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time for that. I do have other shows lined up in March that I want to talk to you guys about before I actually close out the show, so that way you guys can be excited for it, because I'm excited to be able to do this. So I have Beth coming on March 5th from the Made for Movie TV podcast. We're going to be reviewing The Outsiders once again with nostalgia and, of course, with a modern day rating. We're also going to be doing first time watch for me for Copland. So therefore, we're not going to do a nostalgia review or anything like that. It's just me talking about Copland, watching it for the very first time. And I'm going to have Ryan Frost with me, great musician. So we're going to be talking about that. And that's going to be March 17th at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. So that's everything going on in March as of right now. But stay tuned. I have a lot more stuff probably up my sleeve that I'm going to try and work on. So that's going to be it. Don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe button, all that other good stuff. Rate me on where you guys get your podcast from. Give me a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, where you guys get your podcast from. Also, too, follow our Unfiltered Studios friends and stuff like that. Follow the Sleepy G Show. Go on ahead and check out the Stupid History Minute with Kib. Check out Pedals of Support, Nailed It with St. Joe, and also Finding Your Way with the Beep. So, and also too, check out my co-host's show called Rossi's Clubhouse. And that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Clint. Thank you, Rossi. Thank you to Jubilix for commenting in the comment section. I do appreciate that so much. And always until next time, guys, have a great and safe day. And please stay away from bad movies with good movies with bad endings. So always until next time. Bye-bye.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.